And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 729, coming at you on a Thursday evening to get you caught up on the news and notes and outfield debate time, folks. We haven't got to the outfield yet. Here we go. Some fun ones here. Most of them are in the top 200 of ADP, pretty much, according to Draft Champions. So maybe we'll do some deeper ones down the road. We'll see. Might just go to the mound from here. But in order to help me do all this, as usual, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric and my co-host on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tid, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing great, Bubba. It's good to be back for another debate show after doing a couple OC live streams with you and Ryan, which were very fun. This is a little more back to business, a little more serious, but we'll have fun too.
We'll have plenty of fun, but you've been making your rounds and doing quite a good job with that. So, it's probably two different experiences with me and Ryan when you're doing things, but a lot of fun nonetheless. And I did get to peek at some of the show with Ryan. It was pretty good stuff. So there'll be more of that to come if one of us is out. Just keep your phone close by type situation.
Will do.
All right. Let's get into some news and notes. Just about a half hour before the show started, the Jays made another splash this offseason. Some might say a little splash, some might say a big one, but they signed Max Scherzer to a one-year deal, and this is kind of another big move for them. They still maybe have some offensive holes that guys are complaining about, but it was such a good move that Joe Errico even doesn't think the offseason's a bust for the Jays anymore. So that's a big plus. He gives you Gausman, Berríos, Bassett, Scherzer, Bowden, Francis, and a starting five, so all in all, not too shabby when you're breaking it all down. And Mad Max has an ADP of 388 over the last 10 drafts. That's obviously going to come up. But where do you sit on Scherzer, who has battled injuries over the last couple of years?
I've had him highly ranked, at least relative to ADP, but I haven't hit the draft button yet for Max. Kind of because he wasn't signed yet. I mean, he was 40, so there's a chance that he would have retired, especially in a draft and hold. You're kind of stuck with who you draft. So I didn't want to take that risk yet. And I mean, and that's like a double-bladed sword. So he may retire, and just the fact that he is 40 years old, so, and he's struggled to stay healthy. But I have him highly ranked despite all that, just because of how okay he still was last year, or at least the underlying numbers. Notably, Scherzer had a 14.6% swing strike rate. So when I saw that doing my research, I'm like, okay, well, he still has the stuff, but his bias is breaking down. So I guess maybe once it comes to Fab League, I'll be more in on drafting Max, because I could always drop him if he gets hurt. But with two DCs left, I'm not sure how I feel. So I might take a stab, but more likely to draft him come March.
Yeah, he's probably going to hit another IL stint here or there. It's just the way things go these days, because it's usually a back injury or something with Max. But like you said, when he pitches, he's still been very, very effective, and makes that quite interesting, especially from a Fab League standpoint, or if you got a lot of pitching depth, you can play the game in a NFBC 50 or a DC format as well. So I think it's a great landing spot. When I heard he's basically making $500,000 more than Justin Verlander, really pumped on that. So that's another fun Giants moment for me. All right, speaking of fun Giants moments for me, the Dodgers just keep signing people. I know these moves happened a little while, but Ben and I have not recapped news in a little bit. I want to get Ben's thoughts on this, but and it became official yesterday. Kirby Yates is a member of the Dodgers. Tanner Scott is a member of the Dodgers. Michael Kopech might be dealing with a like forearm strain, but now there's reports saying it's overblown, so who knows what's going on there. But you look at this bullpen, Ben, and this is where it gets iffy, because it feels like they're both going to get saves, and that's a theme these days, which we go through this show. Tanner Scott has an ADP of about 147 right now, and Kirby Yates has an ADP of 121. How would you go into a draft approaching the Dodgers closing situation?
Ideally, as of right now, I'd like to try to avoid it. But yeah, so we'll talk about the other move that's closer related next. There's actually a couple of them. And I was hoping that with the signings of these potential closers that things would be more ironed out. But I just think things got murkier. With Scott and Yates, I'm assuming that Yates would get the bigger share of the saves because he's a righty. Scott could be used earlier in the game versus a tough stretch of lefties. And I've been off the Dodgers closers recently because, and namely it's been Evan Phillips, because he doesn't get all the save chances throughout the season, kind of like with Andrés Muñoz and Johan Duran. So I've kind of, even though they're such a good team, the Dodgers, they're like kind of like how the Rays used to be. They'll mix and match a lot. And it's not good for fantasy. And I still and I avoided Yates and Scott because of the uncertainty. And I don't know. I moved Yates higher up. He's kind of like the last of the early 100s tier closers. Talking about like the Jeff Hoffman, Ryan Walker, McGill range for me right now. And then I have Scott more with like the mid 100s closers, Bednar, Ben Joyce, Ryan Pressly, who we'll talk about soon, Kenley Jansen, those guys. I think he's like that next tier, Scott. So I don't know. The next signing got me really irked last night on the Discord. Yep. And I'm still unsure of how things are going to work out. And I don't know. We'll see. I'll say this point now because I was going to save it for the Estevez signing. But I think because of how many committees or unsure bullpens there are, I think we're going to need fewer saves to compete this year. So I think if you end up with one of the Dodgers closers, it's probably not the end of the world. They should have good ratios. And I don't know. I just think there's a lot of committees still. And I think 60 might be like a 90th percentile save total, at least in DCs. I wouldn't be surprised if you're in the low 50s, you're competitive, but that's just my speculation right now.
Well, that makes me feel a lot better at the DC we're in since I got hosed on closers for the most part. So I might be able to battle through that one with some specs with, I think I have Iglesias or something. I can't remember off the top of my head, but at least
one. Did you grab Estevez in that one?
I did grab Estevez as well, yeah. So like, I pieced it together. So I got Calvin Fauché later, which if he gets me 15 to 20 before he gets traded, I'll take my chances. So there's room to breathe at this moment in time where I didn't feel like that about 15 rounds ago in that draft. That's for sure. Cause man, on the end, I'm just precursor for listeners. I'm at the end of this DC. I have Posma right in front of me. So it's basically, there's a lot
CLQ too.
Yeah. It's his CLQ. So that's fun. There's a lot of really good players in this draft, of course. And it's my sixth DC, and it's unlike any other DC I've basically done. Like, there's just ADP is full out the window in this draft. Like, I'm looking at stuff going, okay, they're like 90 picks away. I can wait till the next time and still take them early in theory. No, not even close. They're going like 4 picks later. It's just like what is going on right now. So, yeah, that's it feels like a late February, March draft right now, and it started in mid-January. So, it's good. It's real good. All right. You mentioned Carlos Estevez. This one irked the heck out of me and many others. And then there's, you know, the smarties on Twitter going, you should have known better. Like, yeah, okay. Carlos Estevez signs with the Kansas City Royals 2-year deal with an option for a third. Myself and so many others were all about the Lucas Irsig price tag. And the price tag kept going up. Like, it was, but I wasn't opposed to it. I'm like, cool. You know, he was going around Kirby Yates, 115-ish. Like, sweet. Sounds good. Well, Estevez is in town. Looks like Estevez is the front runner to get saves. Still likely a committee, as you mentioned. Over the last 10 drafts for Carlos Estevez, ADP is 211. He's gone as high as 156. So there's that going there. And then you got Lucas Irsig, whose ADP is up to 95. He's gone as high as 72. That's going to sting. But so he's still going high. I'd imagine his ADP drops a bit. Estevez comes up a bit. How are you approaching this one? Because honestly, weirdly enough, I'd probably rather have shares of this bullpen than the Dodgers because it's not just Yates and Scott. There's more options there to screw things up.
Yeah, that's a good call. So I don't know if I actually said this with the previous news, but I'm trying to avoid these guys for the next few drafts that I do, at least until spring training starts and we see either some patterns or the managers say something. But of course, they could always lie to you because that's never happened before, right? Yeah, like I raised my hand when you were talking, if for anyone listening, because I was big on Irsig. He was my RP1 in two of my first three DCs, which were 400 DCs. So I was not too happy when I saw the news break last night. So I was telling myself, and I've been telling myself still this, that Irsig's the better pitcher. But then like others such as Curlin have said, well, yeah, that means they'll use him in whatever situation because he's the best pitcher. I'm like, yeah, you're probably right. I don't know. Estevez, he used to be bad. I mean, he had that awful second half, I think only 2 years ago on the Angels, and we were expecting him to lose the job. And then he got it back last year, got traded to the Phillies, was kind of closing for them. So, and even his underlying numbers look great last year, Estevez. But Irsig's were arguably better. And I don't know. Like, someone was saying, I think it was Martin Sokolsky in the Discord was saying how the money kind of says that Estevez would be the closer. I mean, he's getting paid $10 million a year versus Irsig's roughly minimum wage salary. So that's annoying, but I don't know. I was looking at roster resource and then Closer Monkey, which is also reliever recon, and it started out they each had the other opposite guy in the, at the head of the committee, but now they've both switched it to Estevez leading the committee, which is unfortunate for me and you and a lot of others. So I don't know. I'm not gonna draft either one until we hear some news. And I guess if they do say that Estevez is the closer, I'll have to move him up in my rankings. But I don't know. I'm hoping that they realize the Urshag is a better pitcher. He should be the closer. But until that, I'm not going to draft either one, I don't think.
A lot of these committees, we're going to talk about another one here in a minute, that it just feels like take the discounted one out of the two. And, you know, if an injury happens or something, you got a stud if that's where you're sitting in need of saves. Otherwise, it's a very murky situation. Does this make you want to, and maybe I missed you say this earlier, I apologize. Does this make you want to take two, like, of more of the elite guys out the gate? Or how are we feeling on that? Because, heck, Lance Lynn now is rumored to be getting signed or potentially signed as a closer. It's just getting ridiculous.
Yeah, so I've always been a fan of waiting on to draft my closer near the back end of the RP1s and then draft an early second one to take advantage of having a better RP2 than most other teams. But after this, I mean, I don't – so the back end RP1s right now for me are Hoffman, Walker, McGill, in terms of 15-teamers, mm-hmm. are Yates, McGill, Walker, Hoffman, and then before them I have Munoz and Duran, who have shown that they're not really full-time closers. So my next two DCs, I think I'm going to go for the top 10 or so, or how I have it is like 8 or 9. And even Batista's, I have him at 9, Felix Batista, and I don't trust him coming back from all the injuries, whether he has a setback or just isn't the same pitcher. So the closers I'm pretty confident with are pretty – the pool's pretty tiny now. So I'm going to look to, in my last two DCs, at least attack early, where I would rather wait if I could. And then when it comes to Fab Leagues, it's like, especially in the main event, I'm going to be very hesitant to draft a third or fourth round closer because of the overall component that I talked about before and all the runs or all the hitting stats you're sacrificing by taking the saves versus all like a workhorse starter. It's tough for me to do that in a main event like that. But for now, at least in the DCs, I'm going to prioritize the early round closers for sure.
Yeah, it'll be really fun to see how things cook in your New York drafts down over there to see how that all plays out. There's still a lot more transactions to take place. But, yeah, like I don't mind a guy taking one early, but it's a lot harder now to get two early and sacrifice so much more to 15. Like, it just destroys a lot of other factors, it feels like. But, hey, maybe things will change. The other pitching relieving situation is Ryan Pressly gets traded to the Chicago Cubs. Presley has shown diminished stuff basically for like the last 3 years. Still looks like they want him to close. He actually had some kind words when he was interviewed the other day that they're gonna have one heck of a back end of the bullpen with Porter Hodge and kind of share it, but time will tell on that. He has to say that basically. Presley's ADP is 465, but he's gone as high as 185 since the move took place, and Porter Hodge has an ADP of 170. Not really interested in anything in this bullpen, but what's your thoughts here?
Well, it comes down to you need an RP2, and the grouping of Bednar, Joyce, Pressly, Jansen, Romano, Scott, for me at least. Now Urseg, Fairbanks, Diaz, there's a lot of warts on those relievers. And I don't know, I have Pressly as my RP18 right now between Joyce and Jansen. And yeah, you were mentioning he's not the same pitcher anymore. Swinging strike rate's okay, 12.6%, but gave a lot of hard contact last year, a lot of contact in the zone, almost a 90% zone contact against him. And like the XERA was kind of elevated. The K rate wasn't that good for a closer. The walk rate's getting a little bit higher. So I don't know. In a Fab league, I'd be much more comfortable taking him because if something happens, you always Fab the backup. But like we're just still doing DCs and trying to secure a relatively stable RP2 without paying up for two really good closers is going to be tough because I don't have a lot of confidence in most of the RP2s right now. And this, I'm kind of lukewarm on Pressly, but I don't know. At least I didn't drop any Porter Hodge. I was always a little skeptical of him keeping the job. And at least I was right on that call.
Yeah, I wanted to hit up here. Nicky Anderson in the chat says, oh, it's okay. At least he didn't snag Hodge and Urseg in a Gladiator.
Sorry, Nick.
Yeah, he still might get some saves, but don't know who other. PJ says Urseg and Hodge were two of my top targets. So for their price, it made sense if they were the closers. I'll say that much for sure. And then this one made me laugh today, and the Discord was having fun with this, is Lance Lynn is getting closer love out there on the market. He's slimmed down. That came in the chat. that, you know, didn't make me feel great after the fun we had last year with Lance Lynn. But yeah, if Lynn gets signed and it just completely unravels another closing situation, it'd just be par for the course here in 2025. Yeah, and as PJ mentions, there's rumors of John Gray could be an option, like, because Chris Martin's there. It feels like the Rangers wanted, like, Yates to come back. Maybe they still go after Jansen, who's out there. Finnegan's still out there. Still a couple more guys that could ruffle feathers. But the Rangers are talking about moving Gray there, which I wrote about on my AL West PT Tomorrow that dropped on Thursday at HQ. It makes sense because what it'll do is it opens up a roster spot for Kumar Rocker in the starting rotation. It's a way to get him in there because right now he's the sixth man, odd man out. Now, if you look at their rotation, there's lots of rooms for injury in Texas, which would open the door for Kumar. But if they want Kumar to start the year with the team, that is one way to do it for sure. So we'll see. Maybe some more interesting things to talk about in the coming days. Back to the Blue Jays, though. They made another move like a week or so ago. They signed Anthony Santander to, I believe it was a 3 or 4 year deal to join the Jays. And this is a nice power boost hit in the middle of the order. Santander currently has an ADP of 114, going as high as 85 in the last 10 drafts. What are your thoughts on Santander?
Well, I actually have him ranked ahead of ADP. I just haven't taken him yet. I don't know. It's not that big of a boost from his ADP last year. I mean, I think he did fall past pick around 10 and some 15s, I think, which was kind of wild. I did scoop him up in my one main event. So but now you're paying that career year price, which isn't terrible though. Like I said, he's still past pick 100, at least as of late. And with Santander, I'm just worried about the average because he's not going to run, of course. He's not, like I said, he had the career year, so he's probably going to regress down from 44 homers. And he's been very flyball heavy, and that's contributed to the low average. So I don't know. Maybe if I have a Bobby Witt team, he would make a lot of sense because I don't need any steals, or I'll have a ton of steals from Witt, and or maybe like a Corbin Carroll team, and I can hopefully have another strong average hitter, and I can absorb the potential 230 that Santander could bring. But I mean, it's definitely good for the Blue Jays. This helps Vlad out a lot. Hope my Bichette bounce back. I don't have any Bichette, but I think he'll bounce back, and this will definitely help him potentially. So yeah, I think it's a good signing. Unfortunately, he stays in the AL East for my Yankees, but that's all right. So I don't know. I'm never really looking for like a power only bat in that range, so that's why I haven't drafted him maybe. And maybe in the right build, it would make sense for me. But yeah, it's fine.
Okay. Yeah. No. I still like him. If you need the power, go for it. But yeah, he's just a power bat at that point, which is a little tricky. I can get Jorge Soler a lot later if you think the same thing. Santander is better. Don't get me wrong, but similar idea behind the two. Last move we got here is Jerickson Profar signs with the Atlanta Braves. Profar, he should slot right in. The roster resource hasn't been in second, moving Ozzie Albies out of the top of the order. We'll see how that all plays out as spring training goes around, but Profar should start every day in left field, moves Jared Kelenic and Brian De La Cruz into a platoon until Ronald Acuna Jr. comes back. Profar has an ADP of 230, as high as 192 in the draft we're doing. He went 200th overall. I figured he'd keep climbing the ADP. Maybe I'm missing something here. What's your thoughts on Profar?
Like Santander, I do have him ranked ahead of ADP Profar, but I haven't drafted him yet. And a lot of that was because of because he didn't sign yet. I wasn't sure what the situation was going to be like. And now that he's on the Braves, I'm still a little hesitant. So like you mentioned, roster resource has Profar batting second right now, but I don't know if I trust that. That's mainly because there's no Acuna start the year. And I can't see them batting him ahead of Ozzie Albies, who is currently sixth on their lineup on roster resource. I think it's going to be Harris, Ozzie, and then that takes away Profar's at bats. I mean, it's still a great lineup. Don't get me wrong. It should bounce back from last year, but and also there's the other fact too that he had a career year last year, and I know people have said that. Sure, the Baseball Savant page backs it up, but I know Ryan said it a bunch, and it's true. Those underlying skills can vary year to year. So who knows if he just got hot last year or if he's a new actual player, and because of that, I haven't been willing to take the chance there. I mean, it's still kind of early, at least in a 15, because you really that's first. I think that's his 14th round pick 200, which is where he's probably gonna end up going. So, Yeah, I might take a stab, but I don't know. He's definitely more of a like a draft and hold safety type player, but that's if you're confident that Profar will repeat what he did last year. And I just don't know if that's in the that's a high probability or not right now.
Yeah, I love his ADP for where for going to a Braves team. Like if you're looking for a free agent to sign somewhere, pretty good landing spot, especially if you hit second, fifth, sixth. I don't care. That's going to work out pretty well, you'd think. And yeah, he's coming off a career year. I don't expect that from him, but it, like even Uncle Ted says, as an outfield five, he could play pretty well for you because he'll contribute in parts of all five categories, which is pretty nice as well. So I expect his ADP to keep climbing, but maybe not. Like I said, our draft, he went 200. That might have been after he signed. I can't remember correctly, but pretty much in line where things are going right now for sure. All righty, it's debate time. Let's have some fun with this. We go to the outfield. These are some fun, like very tight debates. Obviously, I keep them close to where they're going in ADP. That's what makes them debates, of course. But we're going to kick it off here with a three-man debate towards the top of the draft. So in reality, probably not a wrong answer. It's kind of just however you feel about the situation. But I know people know my answer to this one already. And it is interesting. I'll say this much. Since I made this outline yesterday with the updated ADP, the order of this has shifted. So that's fun. Not by much though. So I have Corbin Carroll, Juan Soto, Kyle Tucker. Corbin Carroll has an ADP of 9.2, Juan Soto 9.2, Kyle Tucker 9.3. Doesn't get much closer than that, folks. Pick your poison is what it comes down to. And I have a pretty clear order for me here. Where do you have Tucker, Carroll, Soto? Because again, first round pick, can't really go wrong with much of it.
No, you can't. And when I saw that this was the first one, I was thinking about my rankings. I go, well, I don't know if I would actually follow my rankings because the way I have it right now, I have it Soto, Tucker, then Carroll in my overall rankings. I have Tucker on two teams because of how he fell to me. I got him at 12 once, which I found was mind-blowing. I don't know why Tucker fell so late. I mean, I'll take it all day. Don't get me wrong. And I just took Soto, I believe, an hour DC. No, yeah, I think an hour DC I took Soto. I think I had the sixth pick again. I wanted to switch up who I had before the sixth pick. So with Soto, he was just so dominant. He was arguably like the third best player, I think, in fantasy. Or he's probably fourth after the top three in ADP right now. Like Soto had almost a 20% barrel rate last year. He really made an effort to increase that launch angle because he's always been had issues with the ground balls, Soto. And we were pretty confident that Yankee Stadium would help him. And he made an adjustment, I think, with trying to hit the ball in the air more. And he's like the 99th percentile, 100 percentile on all the Statcast sliders, which isn't a surprise. And like the barrel rate was previously like in the 13 range for him, and he added 6 percentage points to it. He had 91 barrels Soto last year. That's insane. That's kind of like Judge.
Yeah.
So he was 25. So I don't think it was like a fluky thing because we know how good he is, and he made the adjustment with a launch angle. It was his highest since 2019. It was 10.7 degrees on average. The year before that was 6.7 degrees. So he's like I said, he's hitting the ball in the air more. And his average has fluctuated from time to time, but I think it's been more bad luck. And he does take away opportunities because he walks so much, but it's going to help him score a ton of runs. He's not going to be a zero in steals. He's going to maybe get 8 to 10 in a good year. So I don't know. I think he's a safe batting average asset, and I think his power is legit now. Like he should approach 40. Every year going forward, as long as he doesn't regress back with a lower average launch angle. So, and I'm not worried about Soto signing with the Mets. I think no matter what happened, he's been on a different team every year anyway. So if you want to make that argument, I don't think it's valid. And some people have said that it's not even a thing either. Like the new big contract thing. I mean, and his is big. Soto's I think he beat Ohtani. So yeah, I'm fine with taking Soto. I have him just on one team for now. And I know Tucker is good with the steals and of course Carroll, but I'll stop there for Soto. So that's why I have Soto first right now.
Yeah, no, it's fine. He's third for me. Again, very much pick grasping at straws here, and I have biases that I have planted a flag, and I'm going to stick with that flag, and I'm going to go down with that ship type thing. And maybe that's just foolish of me, but that's where I lie. I've said it on other, I think on the outfield preview, how many shares I have of Kyle Tucker, or I mentioned it on my Astros preview, one of the two. So I have Soto third. Again, nothing wrong with him. As even Uncle Ted points out, Soto, Lindor, Vientos, maybe Acuna, Nimmo's a beast. Offense is still going to be very good. Heck, Alonso might return for all we know. Like, there's a lot to like in that offense. Zero knocks on Soto at all. One of the best pure hitters we've ever seen. OBP leagues, he's way above these guys. Like, I'll clarify that for anybody playing in an OBP format. Take Soto basically probably second behind Otani, or right up in that range type deal. So no gripes with him at all. I guess the biggest differentiation for me, and you hit on it, is just the steals compared to these other guys. It's a knock. So when we're talking these early round talents, I know I like to lead with a bunch of maybe 20, 20, 30, 30 type guys the first couple of rounds. That's just my philosophy on drafting, and many have similar philosophy. So that's why I would have Soto third. But again, if I'm waiting three picks out and these three are left, I will take Soto third if I have to type thing. So how do you have the other two shaken out?
Yeah, Tucker's just as consistent as they come. He was going to have a monster year last year if he didn't get that fluke injury, so I'm not worried at all about that. I have it Soto 6, Tucker 7 in my overall rankings, and Carroll 9, so they're all right next to each other for me. I value them all very similarly. Tucker, the one thing that's always been, I think I mentioned this before, that his sprint speed actually isn't very good. He's 20th or 30th percentile, and which is surprising considering everyone thinks of him as like a 25-25 threat, which he has been, but I think he's more of a pick your spots, or maybe doesn't run as hard all the time. Who knows? So I think I'm not worried about the change of Wrigley. I know it's deep down the lines, but it's kind of shallow to the gaps in the center. So I think he'll be fine with the power. He's like in his career, I think he's 27 or 28 Tucker. So he's right in his prime. So I love the power and the speed. Like I said, I have him on two of my four teams already. And then with Carroll, I think it's just because I'd rather have the power heavy guys before him. This kind of ties into why I have Soto first of the three as well. And Carroll, he's kind of a risk for average, even though he shouldn't be. He's so fast. He has a decent ground ball rate as well. I'm not worried about any injuries with Carroll. I kind of wish he would stop doing the Julio Rodriguez thing where he's terrible in the first half and great in the second half. It'd be nice if he was good all year round. Yep. But, I mean, it's Roto if you're playing that. So as long as the stats are there at the end, it's fine. So I could have drafted Carroll. I actually considered doing drafting him over Soto in our DC just because of starting out with so many steals. But, and all going back to the Soto discussion too, I think I'm okay not getting steals in the first round because of how plentiful they are throughout the rest of the draft. Of course, in our DC, I didn't adjust. So I took Riley at value because he fell to me in the third round, Austin Riley, that is. And then I ended up taking Willie Adames. I almost said a max on him, and Riley and Adames aren't projected for enough steals to make up for what Soto lacks. And so I've kind of been behind in steals in this DC, which is fine. I mean, you're not gonna be perfect in every draft, but as long as you have a plan, you can still get steals by drafting Soto. It's just you got to make sure you follow that plan. But yeah, all three are fine, and I wouldn't be upset with having any of them.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I have it Tucker, Carroll, Soto, of course. I think pretty much everyone knew that before I even said a word.
I almost said that myself.
But it's Tucker to me is a 30-30 guy on a healthy season. I have no qualms or worries about Chicago. Still a very good lineup. Wrigley's Wrigley. I'm fine with that. And Carroll, I'm buying the bounce back, what we saw in the second half, almost like a year removed from the shoulder injury that everyone was concerned about. Power started coming back in the second half. Speed was definitely there. Started hitting for average. Like, I'm back on board there, and that Arizona team's still very, very good. So I like Carroll. Like, Carroll could be a guy that could go 20-40 pretty, like, easily, and no one should be surprised by that with Corbin Carroll. Corbin Carroll could pull an Ellie with a better batting average. That's where I'll go with that. And people have Ellie going, like, fourth. So, Tucker, Carroll, Soto for me. Can't really go wrong, though. All right, this one, again, people might know what I like to do here too, but we got Mookie Betts versus J-Rod. Julio Rodriguez, Mookie Betts, ADP of 11.4, J-Rod 12.3. Ben, where do you stand on this one? Because I know we've had some texting discussions recently about an article that came out about Seattle.
Yeah, we did. And earlier in the year, offseason, I was Mookie ahead of J-Rod, but I have switched that. So now I have, at least in my overall rankings, I have J-Rod 14th and Mookie 15th. So I am leaning towards J-Rod, which I'm pretty confident you are as well. J-Rod, it's just Yeah, so you mentioned the article. I think it was Mike Petriello, right?
Yep.
Who wrote it? Yes, it was a great article. So if you haven't read the article yet, it's on MLB.com, or just at least go to the Mariners website, and it should be there. And it talks about why team – I almost call it Safeco again. It's why T-Mobile Park was such a bad spot for hitting last year, and actually kind of recently as well. And I was texting Bubba about, like you mentioned, and J-Rod's OPS on the road, like with the splits, was very bad last year. I'm going to pull it up right now. It was like, oh, of course, on the year he pretty much underwhelmed. J-Rod did, and I think a lot of it is due to what happened in T-Mobile Park. So I'll start on the road. So on the road last year, J-Rod had a 806 OPS, which is good. I mean, it's not first round worthy necessarily, but it's not going to hurt you. So, but on at home, it was 656. So he lost 150 points at home versus the road, J-Rod. And like, it was basically, it happened to everybody on the team last year, except for maybe Cal Raleigh, who somehow, well, he has so much power that I think he could just ignore like the hard parts for him to hit in, and he'll be fine. So, and I compared J-Rod's splits on the previous 2 years, and it has declined since 2022, the home OPS for him. So I was saying to Bubba, I don't understand what would make a stadium like get worse for hitting without any substantial changes. And I mean, and then I said, unless the players are just bad there right, by chance, and it shows up as like a park factor. But they're talking about the sunlight there with how it strikes the batter's eye, the angle of the batter's eye, a bunch of things. And it's definitely got me worried about J-Rod. I know some people are pretty high on him. He had that massive first full season a couple years ago, but I still have him at the back end of the first round. So I definitely like J-Rod, but I'm cautious to draft him just because of the struggles that he saw last year. And with Mookie, I'll talk about him real quick. He's getting older, and we had a little debate in the Discord or about him with how the power looked for him last year. And actually pre-injury, he had fewer homers than he did post-injury, Mookie did, which I thought was kind of interesting. I think it was like 6-9 before he got his hand broke, and then he had nine afterwards in the last 2 months of the year. Like, his XBA is still great, Mookie. All the play metrics are awesome. It's just that the barrel rate was 29th percentile, 6% for him. And Mookie's not going to steal a lot anymore. He's probably like a 10 to 15 steal guy. And now that he's older, maybe he's like an upper 30s homer guy instead of a mid-30s to upper – I mean, an upper 20s homer guy versus a mid to upper 30s, which he's been the last 2 years before last year. So I know he has multi-position eligibility and he's on the Dodgers, but maybe that means they give him more rest because they can afford to. And I think he's going to be fine. I heard some people say that they have him in the 20s in their own personal rankings, some pretty good players, which kind of opened my eyes to, okay, maybe I'm a little too high on Mookie. But I, as a leadoff hitter for the Dodgers or the second hitter, you can't really go wrong. But I still prefer J-Rod because I think he has a little more upside than what Mookie does.
Yeah, I take J-Rod as well. Like we talked about, even when he has a down season, it's still 2020. He's got three years in the bigs, 3 years of at least 2020 with the 130-30 involved. Like, that's pretty darn impressive for someone so young, even in a bad ballpark. That's where I'm like, when we talked about it, I'm thinking, okay, at worst, I'm getting a 2020 guy in the first round. That does not kill you. And he's proven he can beat the ballpark. And if I can go get him bouncing back to 30-30 or whatever, we're gravy. So I'm taking J-Rod as well. Like PJ in the chat said, he'd be willing to take J-Rod over Carroll. I'm fine with that argument. I'm not going to be opposed to it. I love when I have a late round 80, KDS, and I can go there and take J-Rod in the back end of the first round. That makes me very happy. I love doing that start. I think I did that in our draft, actually. I think I went J-Rod Chirio or something like that. So that was really good. That's when things were good. And then I got back to round 3 and 4 and just kept, unraveling. But, yeah, I'm a big J-Rod proponent. I would have him actually. I'd probably take him over Soto personally if I had to make that debate again because of the steals more than anything. But for this debate, Soto versus Betts, I'll take J-Rod. With Betts, it's like, okay, he could still be very good. He might hit for a very good average. J-Rod still hits for like 270 plus. I'm fine there. Betts, like, the power fluctuations always worry me. I know he had the wrist injury last year, and that's a very fair argument for the down production. The speed's always inconsistent with him too. And the thing I've said for a couple of years ago with the Braves, and I'll say it with the Dodgers, is yes, they are very, very good, very good. They're going to score a ton of runs, but only so many guys can drive them in. Like, there's only going to be so many 100 RBI guys. It's going to get spread out, if that makes sense to anybody. And that might just down his production. Again, your grains of salt stuff here. It's first-round talents. But he might score 120 runs. That's a big plus. Not many guys can do that. But, yeah, I'll take J-Rod for the overall five-category profile, where bets, I think there's a couple potential downfalls in there if things don't go right. And you mentioned the depth of the team could lead to more rest. They should have the division clinched by the 4th of July. So a lot of cool stuff like that. And, yeah, give me J-Rod for sure. All right, now we got a couple of young guns here. We're going to go Jarren Duran coming off a career year. ADP is at 22. Another young gun coming off a great rookie year. Should have been rookie of the year. Jackson Merrill at 24. So a couple picks apart between Duran and Merrill. Where do you sit on these two? Because it feels like, Ben, in drafts, Duran just falls because no one really wants to take him.
Yeah, I've seen him fall as well. I have it as Merrill. Merrill's my 10th outfielder right now, and Duran is my 11th. And there's only one player between them overall for me. Well, for one, the projections don't like Duran that much. I mean,
real quick, I want to stop you. I noticed it was mentioned in our Discord while you were talking. If anybody goes to Fangraphs now, there's this cool thing called the Bat and the Bat X on the projections now. Just throwing that out there.
Oh, let's go.
They dropped like this afternoon. So, all right, sorry to interrupt you again, but Duran versus Merrill.
No, that was worthy of a disruption. So thank you for letting me know.
Yeah, that's nice.
I was going to say, according to ATC and Steamer, Duran is hitter 28 and Merrill 25. So they're pretty close in terms of projections as well. I'll have to see what the Bat X says. But yeah, it's like with Duran, he had a career year. And now we got a huge ADP boost for him. He was going like in the mid 100s last year, and now he's a top two pick in 15 team leagues. I mean, the same thing about Merrill though, too. He was like not even getting drafted in some leagues at one point, I'm sure. And then now he's getting drafted at the same point in the draft as Duran. But I think the profile for Merrill is better. He's also younger too. So there's that chance that he gets even better this year. I forget if James Anderson was pretty high in Merrill or not when you had him on.
He's high on him, but he's not like pushing him much higher, but he's definitely like, yeah, this dude's good.
Yeah, I think so. And he's a big guy, Merrill. So I think he can grow into more power. He did have 11% barrel rate last year, 11.3%, which was 2 percentage points higher than Duran. And I mentioned before, Duran has a bad split versus lefties, which he's going to stay in the lineup. And I don't know if they're actually going to drop him down the lineup versus lefties, but it's going to hamper his production if he's playing full time. And his XBA was pretty good, Duran's last year, but Merrill's was 20 points higher. I think Merrill's is a better hitter than Duran. So I have them pretty close to each other. I could draft Merrill in one draft and then take Duran to switch it up in the next one. But I just think Merrill's a better hitter, so I'm leaning with him over Duran.
Yeah, this one's really tricky because what Duran did last year was amazing. Like the power, the speed, the power kind of really developed, big time ballooned in a huge way. The batting average is also a big boost. Like, do we trust that to continue to that extent type thing? Whereas Jackson Merrill, and people could say, well, Bubba, you just said this about Duran. How can you say it about Merrill? Fair, one season. But Merrill kind of had that hype train coming behind him, where Duran, like, there's expectations, but not the same, if that makes sense. Like, Merrill has showcased it. I love Jackson Merrill. Like, to me, that was a conversation we had for a while. Like, why is he not going higher potentially? But then who's coming down is the question when you have those conversations. Like, he's one of those guys, and people say, who could be a first rounder next year? It's not in the first round. Jackson Merrill's one of the first guys I think about. Like, he could easily get in there. It's just a lot of it will depend on where he hits in the order, because that'll help with the run production questions, the run scored, runs on RBIs. But the power is legit. The speed's legit. I think the average is really good too. So, I got Merrill over Duran. It's nothing against Duran. It's just, I guess, we saw a couple seasons with Duran and then finally saw where Merrill does it right out the gate. So it's just kind of like, so again, I'm probably talking in circles for a lot of people. But, give me Merrill over Duran. And, I have Merrill. I wouldn't mind, like, if Trio is off the board, Merrill would probably be right after him for me. That's where I kind of sit there. All right, the next one up here, this was actually someone asked it in the Discord. I'm like, we got you covered already, folks. The Law Dog, Lawrence Butler, ADP of a basically 70 over the last 10 drafts. Brenton Doyle, ADP 75 over the last 10 drafts. The Law Dog had an amazing second half, one of the best in all of baseball. You got Doyle, who had a really, really, really strong season as well. How do you go about attacking these two?
This is the first one where I have some big separation between the two, and also because we're getting later in the draft, of course, as well. But yeah, for me, it's Butler as my outfielder 16 and then Doyle's outfielder 20. So not a big difference, but I have him a little bit more than a round apart in overall my overall rankings. It's mainly because Butler's the better hitter, at least based on the underlying numbers. He had a – I mean, not by much, though. Doyle was very good as well, but Butler's gotten beat in exit velocity, barrel rate, hard hit, basically all the Statcast metrics. He has better contact rate, chases less frequently, and strikes out less. So it's slightly better around the board for Butler. They're both projected at leadoff. I think Oakland's – or yeah, I can't say Oakland anymore. The Athletics' new park should be helpful for offense since it is part of the PCL, even though it may skew as a pitcher park in the PCL. It should be – it's at least comparable in size, but there's going to be less foul territory. The ball's probably going to travel better if I had to imagine. So I like Butler. It's just – I have him ranked at a point where you're really banking on a full year of growth. It's kind of like the Jaren Duran leap of faith last year, but yeah. Butler's going like half as early, if that makes sense. He's going roughly like – divide Duran's ADP from last year in half. You have Butler's ADP this year is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. So you're paying a lot more for that breakout with Butler. And he's almost 2020. But he made gains in strikeouts, and we've seen that those gains don't always stick with players. So it's more of a cautionary thing. I haven't drafted Butler yet, but it's because I've been taking pitching in that range, and I do want to switch it up where I do attack hitting in those like fourth, fifth, sixth round areas at one point just to see how the team looks. So I'll be targeting Butler in that draft whenever it happens. And then quickly with Doyle, I do like Doyle. I do have him in a team. He actually felt I was checking, and he felt like pick 99 for me in a DC. I'm like, thank you for that. I'll take that all day. But I have some concerns. I know Coors will mask a lot of his deficiencies, Doyle's, but some of the other things that I noticed, which I'm going to pull up his splits right now. I said Brenton Doyle. I can't spell his name. Brenton Doyle, Ben, come on.
It's great. The Doyle rules. That's what it should be in the system.
Yeah. The problem is that there's so many players in the Yahoo thing. I go to Yahoo for the splits, but, all right. So Home OPS for Doyle was 907, row was 637. But the homers and the steals are pretty much the same. He had 12 homers at home, 16 steals versus 11 homers on the road, 14 steals. So basically the same total, which I thought was very interesting. It was just that the average lost 100 points of batting average and the OPS almost 300 points. But I think because of the steals and the homers, you still play them on the road, of course, especially when you're drafting this early. So it's not like he's a complete zero on the road. It's just that the average will take a hit. And then the other thing I just want to mention with Doyle real quick is he had 11 homers in July, which was kind of concerning. Of course, it's like I said before, it's roto, so they all count the same. But he had almost half of his homers on the year in 1 month. So it has me concerned that maybe he was just seeing the ball super well. He wasn't very good at all at hitting last year, Doyle. And that's why I've only had him on one team, and because he fell so much. At his ADP, I'll probably not target him too often, only if he falls like he did in that one draft. But he should be a 20-30 guy with and Coors is going to help the average, like I said. So he's not going to hurt you there, at least he shouldn't. But I know someone has compared him to Nolan Jones. I think he's better than Nolan Jones.
Yes, I agree.
Because I think like the plate discipline's a little bit better than what Jones did two years ago. So, yeah, I definitely prefer Butler over Doyle. It's just that they both have some risk, and that's why they're a little bit farther down the draft board.
Yeah, I'm with you pretty much all of that. I got Butler over Doyle as well. James Anderson loves Lawrence Butler, like, in a big, big way. I do, too. I was all over it when they were talking about the swing changes he made at AAA before they called him up, and then it carried over right away with him. So it's like we got 22-18 in 125 games, kind of less if you count out the first stint up there. It is interesting to see, though, when you look at the projections, like the Bat X has him for 25-14, hitting .244, where the Bat X has – Doyle going 21-26 hitting .253. So the Bat X likes Doyle more, all things considered. I still take Lawrence Butler. I think that ballpark, I know there's some people still don't think so. It's going to be a hitter's ballpark. It should be a hitter's ballpark. Hitting at the top of the order in a decent, at least top half of the A's order with Rooker and company at their Bengaliers. So I do like Butler in that regard. But I have nothing wrong with Doyle as long as he's for average. Like last year was that first big jump in average. That was the concern with the strikeouts. Strikeout rate dropped 10%, and that obviously helped skew the batting average in the right direction. If I needed to maybe point something in the right angle for Doyle, his defense will keep him out there. Where if Butler slumps, I don't think they move on from him, but they have other options to play with in Oakland, is all I'm going to try to say. If it is a one-hit wonder, Doyle's still going to play. I'll take Butler for the potential ceiling over Doyle, but again, this is why they go close in drafts, and it is interesting to see that the Bad X actually does like Doyle more so than Butler, which was pretty surprising. It seems like Butler is kind of ahead of him everywhere else. Like Steamer has Butler 29 and 21, Bad X 25 and 14. So, and a 255 versus 244 average, big difference there. So it'll be interesting to see what your rankings look like once you incorporate the Bad X into your algorithm there. All right, the next one here is one we've kind of already had on this show before, so I'm curious to see where things go elsewhere here, but it's Seiya Suzuki coming in with an ADP of 90, Brian Reynolds at 97. So where do you stand on these two? Ben, you're muted. Mute.
I never know that before, I don't think.
Okay. That's okay. It's first
time for everything, right? Yep. Yeah, so I was saying, I think it's basically the Spider-Man GIF, and then yep. Also the it's the same picture meme. It's essentially these guys. I've always been a big fan of the both of Seiya and Reynolds, especially in draft and holds. They're like 15 team gold because they're so consistent, and they're very like their profile covers average and steals as well. I do slightly lean Seiya ahead of Reynolds. Actually, in my rankings, it goes Seiya, Santander, and Reynolds. I probably should move Santander behind Reynolds though, but. For this argument, I have Seiya one spot ahead of Reynolds, we'll say. And he just has better underlying numbers, Seiya does. Better barrel rate, a better hard hit, better average exit velocity, doesn't chase as often, walks more. He did. So I think we talked about Seiya in the BABIP show.
Maybe that's what it was, yeah.
And so I think his BABIP went up last year. And at the same time, his K rate also went up because he ended up hitting roughly the same average. And so the K rate, something to watch with Seiya, if he was just trying to hit the ball harder, maybe it's a result of just trying going for the extra power, then he struck out a little bit more, which is fine as long as the BABIP doesn't come back down. And I know you said it before in previous shows, and it's true for sure. It's just that Seiya has not been able to stay healthy for a full year. And he still kind of produces what Reynolds does despite being hurt all the time. And not like he's not like the Grom or Trout. He misses 20 games or 30 games each year, Seiya. So it's not terrible. It's just kind of a nuisance. And if he's in the DH this year, because they have a ton of outfielders now in Chicago, and maybe that just keeps him healthy and he plays 155 games. And I think he'll definitely, and he has the speed that Reynolds doesn't really show as much as I would like Reynolds to. But I'm definitely taking Seiya. I think a little bit more power average and seal upside with him. But Reynolds is going to hit second for the Pirates. He's as consistent as they come, and there's no problems with him. And I think we had the debate on your OC because you took Seiya like three rounds before Reynolds did, which I think was more of an indictment on Reynolds being a value because I think they should go pretty close to each other. But in an OC, like I said, there is more upside with Seiya. So I get why you took him over Reynolds, and I have him ranked over Reynolds, like I said. So I love them both, but I just lean Seiya Suzuki.
All right. I lean Seiya as well. I think people should know that by now on this show. He's one of my most rostered players. The only concern I have, and it's an argument I've listened to very nicely, is, you know, I agree there's the 20 home runs back-to-back years, even with the injuries, 285, 283. Like, we know who he is as a hitter. He stole 16 bags last year compared to 8. Can we trust that? That is the question. Because if he reserves 10 stolen bases, it legit is Brian Reynolds, like Spider-Man. Like, the only edge Seiya has basically is this potential speed, I guess, is what it comes down to. And then again, if he has a full season of like 150 games, he's going to DH. Who knows what's going to happen there? Maybe things change as well. That's also a plus in that direction. But yeah, I'll just keep this short and sweet so we can move on to another one here. But give me Seiya Suzuki. I think Brian Reynolds is great for 15s, not a fan in 12s. I gave Ryan a bunch of flack for that. He still did it anyways. So we'll see how that turns out.
You got that 100 score on whatever is it, RotoWire or RotoBall or whatever the production
is. Which is like, it's like the Yahoo death nail. So it's okay. All right, we talked about this man earlier, but now we're going to group him with a couple players, and it's an interesting bunch. You got Anthony Santander, ADP of 115. You got the rising stud in Riley Green at 118. And then you got Christian Yelich, who has pretty much a really great floor, but he has to play, key caveat there, at an ADP of 120. I know we've had, I can't remember who it was in our Discord, Ben, which was nice that he had a similar injury and procedure to what Yelich did, and basically gave us the timetable for an athlete to return. And on paper, we should be ready to roll with Yelich, which was nice to hear. But how do you differentiate between Santander, Riley Green, Christian Yelich?
Yeah, so I think my previous discussions kind of alluded to it. So I have Santander first of the three, and then Yelich. So Santander is 22 for me after 22. Yelich is 26, and then I have Green right behind him at 27. So I'm a big fan of all three. I'll say that now. So if I say anything bad about any of them, it's just to split hairs. But Santander, I just like the power potential more with him, and like the 90-30-90 profile. Like I said before, though, he could hurt your average. So you got to make sure that if you draft Santander, you have a pretty good base going into that pick. Yeah, the fact that Yelich got the surgery, I think, is good for his future prospects. But I had him on a DC last year, and it crushed me when he was out for the year, basically, and he was doing so well. Yelich was. It's just tough to hit draft when you're trying to not invite too much injury risk onto your teams. I'm a little more injury agnostic this year, I think, to a degree, than I have been previous years. Especially on the pitching side, I'm going to try to just value the best players more often than not going forward. And I think Yelich kind of is leaning towards that Trout DeGrom risk category for me, where it's a little bit more than your typical injury risk. He's had back issues for a while, and I know, like I said, he had the problem fixed, hopefully, but he is older now. Will he run as much because of the injuries that he's had? That's been a lot of his value, that high average for Yelich and the steals. And the ground ball rate is going to sap his power. It's almost 55% last year. So I have him ranked in a good spot, just that I just haven't been able to hit draft yet on him. And then quickly with Green, I love him. I just wish he would run more. And he's kind of an average risk, which it's mainly because of his K rate. It's kind of elevated. It was only almost 27% last year for Riley Green. And that resulted in a 258 XBA, which isn't terrible, but with the type of prospect that he was hyped up to be, I was hoping for a little bit more. And I think his ADP is kind of early. I don't know. It's if he was going a little bit later, I think I'd be more in on Green. But with the lack of steals upside, I've been passing over him as well. So I'm kind of a fan of them all. It's just that I haven't drafted any of them yet.
Yeah, this one is this is the lazy answer or the cop out. It's like, if you need power, I love Santander here. I love him here. If you believe Christian Yelich is healed, which reports, procedure, type of injury, say yes, but we know back injuries can be horrible. I actually probably have Yelich tops here because I still think he's like a 15, 20, anywhere from 15 to 20 homers, 20 to 25 steals on 100. Like right now, the BADX has him for only 122 games. It still has him 15, 21. Like 2 years ago in 2023, 19 homers, 28 steals. Last year at 315 before he got hurt, he had 11 homers and 21 steals in 73 games. Like his per game, like paces are very, very good. It's just a matter. It's like it's all not comparing him to Jacob DeGrom, but how we say like how many innings can DeGrom throw? You're going to get this. Like with Yelich, it is a question of how many games. But you know, at the bare minimum of 122, they have him as a pretty good stat line. If he creeps to 140, we're sitting real pretty with Christian Yelich this ADP. I think it's kind of a gift ADP at that point, but it all comes down to your risk tolerance with Yelich. So I'm going to say I have Yelich number one here. Green is such a tough one for me, like because he's not going to run at all. Like there's no running at all. Where Santander might sneak a steal or two in there. Green did have four steals last year, if I'm mistaken, but I don't see him running a ton. Where Santander's probably got 10 more home runs in him than Green does. So I'm going to go Yelich, Santander, Green. I know a lot of people are going to hate that because a lot of people like Riley Green. Like there's a lot of Riley Green fans out there. Just not my cup of tea right now.
I mean, the park hurts as well, too. He's playing in Detroit. Another great point. Like, his StatCast looks great, but only 24 homers isn't that great to show for it. So, yeah, I wish he was going lower Green, but oh well.
All right, Uncle Ted, please sit down and listen to this one closely. We have two young players here. Dylan Cruz, ADP of 132. Pete Crow Armstrong, ADP of 135. Where do you stand on this one?
Well, maybe Uncle Ted, you want to close your ears because you're not going to like my answer when you sit down. It's not terrible, though. I have Dylan Cruz outfield at 31, PCA outfield at 39. and about a round apart in my overall rankings, if talking about 15 teamers. The big difference for me is where they're going to hit in the lineup. Dylan Cruz is probably hit second for the Nationals. PCA probably gonna hit seventh, eighth, or ninth for the Cubs. And that's a big differentiator for me. I'm sure many people have heard me say that before. Just the extra plate appearances that Cruz should get is going to separate him a lot, I think. Like, it's not like he's really slower than PCA. I think they're two of the fastest guys in the league. So it's not like you're getting a big advantage on speed one way or the other, no matter how you lean. And I think with Cruz, because I have drafted him so far, I think he was just really unlucky with his BABIP last year. I'm going to pull that up to confirm it. Because his average, I believe, was 218.
Yeah.
Cruz's was. Yeah, and he had a 253 BABIP with a – versus a ground ball rate. So he had – well, this is kind of an issue. A 57% ground ball rate for Cruz, but his BABIP with his speed should not be that low. It should be, like, at least 300, not 253. So you add 50 points to his average. You're talking about, like, 270 with – I know James really liked him. James Anderson likes Cruz. He has 40 steal potential. He had three homers in 30 games. So that's like a 16-homer pace. So if he goes 16-40 with a 270 average, that's a solid pick. And he should, if he's going to hit second for the Nationals, whose lineup isn't that terrible, he could score 85 runs maybe. And like PCA, he did come on pretty strong in the second half last year. But it's just, like I said before, it's the lineup position. It's going to be hard for him to crack the top three in the Cubs lineup. And that's really the big factor for me. If PCA was hitting higher, I'd be definitely more in on drafting him, but I'll probably let Uncle Ted and others draft him over me.
Yeah. I thought Pete Crow would be lower in drafts. For me, it's like, yeah, he got it going towards the end of the year. Pete Crow Armstrong did. And it was nice. And maybe he's got a little more power, but in 123 games, we saw 10 homers, 27 steals, and a 237 average. Throughout the minors, like even at AAA last year, he had 255, five homers, 10 steals in 26 games. So, okay, maybe he's a 15 home run guy, 35 steals. That's very good. Not knocking that at all. He is going to hit probably ninth with the Cubs. So that is a factor as well to what you were mentioning before. I love Cruz. I'm with you. And I just did the Cubs preview show that comes out on Monday. I did the Nationals, came out today when we're recording. So these guys are both very fresh in my conversations. Cruz, probably similar power to Pete Crow. I think he's a better batting average asset for sure, and speed galore. He had 12 steals last year. The Nationals run, and they run some more when you're not looking. That team runs crazy. 12 steals, and I believe it was 15 attempts in 31 games. You start extrapolating things out there. A projection of like 25 steals is far too low for a guy that's going to play 140-plus games. There is really no reason outside of an injury where Dylan Cruz does not steal at least 40 bases. Like, this is big boy stuff. And if he can find his power stroke, the dude is 23. And we did see some nice contact from him towards the end last year. The 6.4% barrel rate, that is not great, but not horrific. You know, Pete Crow's got 7.4, so both fair, very fair in those regards. But, like, you know, you talk X-Stats once in a while. I do, too. Some people don't love them, but – you mentioned the BABIP luck. Yeah, XBA was 253 for Dylan Cruz. So there's definitely a bump there. I'll take Dylan Cruz all day here. Lauren Auerbach opened my eyes to him more. James Anderson opened my eyes to him more since I've had those conversations. One reason I love doing these shows is to talk to smart people like you and others is I've at least in drafts been more inclined to like, okay, we're going to probably take some Dylan Cruz if it starts filling the team build properly. So, yeah, give me Cruz over PCA. All right, we're going to go to the next one here. We're going to go to your backyard. We're going to go to the Yankees, a guy that I keep seeing more and more articles written about him. That is one Jason Dominguez coming in at an ADP of 153. But I really like this debate because it's a rookie potential breakout versus Adelis Garcia, who we've seen breakout coming off a down year ADP of 155. So two picks after him. They're going right next to each other. Do you get a chance on Dominguez in his rookie campaign going nuts, or do you want to get kind of a guy you know who he is that could bounce back a bit? Natalie's, where do you stand?
Well, I'm gonna use the why not both meme because I just took them both in RDC.
Yeah, Adelis filled you nicely after we had that conversation, but I think it's because I took someone you wanted, so that's fair.
Well, and I said thank you for letting me diversify a little bit because yeah. I'll be back to drafting that person very soon, I'm sure.
We'll talk about next. Yes.
Yes. So despite taking Dominguez earlier in this draft, I have Dominguez or Garcia ranked ahead of Dominguez, 30th to 38. I think like the power is still there for Garcia. He had a 12% barrel rate. I'm just concerned about the average and the Ks a little bit. The contact rate was pretty awful, 67% overall for Garcia. But the Rangers were down as a whole, and he's not terribly old. He does have kind of one of those profiles that could age pretty quickly. Garcia does. But he was still pretty valuable despite all that last year. And so like at ADP, I won't probably take Garcia too often, but like when he fell to me, I got him in the 180s in RDC. I couldn't hit draft quickly enough on Garcia. And then quickly on Dominguez. So I love Dominguez because A, he's on the Yankees, and he showed the promise when he had gotten called up 2 years ago. In that September, he was awesome. This past year wasn't as good. He kind of struggled a little bit, but it wasn't for like a lack of skills. He had a great walk rate, Dominguez did. And this is I want to mention the walk rate because it kind of ties into his lineup potential. On the shortstop debate show, I was professing my hate for Volpe as a fantasy option and kind of my disdain as a Yankee fan for how he's kind of struggled so far. There was this beat reporter article came out today, Brian Hoke, the Yankees beat writer, saying how this is from Aaron Boone's mouth. Of course, it's Aaron Boone, so he could be lying, but they're open to having Dominguez bat in the top of the lineup. And I think he's definitely more of a leadoff hitter profile than Volpe is, and even Jazz, because of Dominguez's walk rate. And he's fast enough. He has power. So if he can do really well in spring training, Dominguez, and show that he actually field in left field, because that was an issue for him last year. Should be easier than center field, though. And if he can just, I think that he's such a small sample that I'm not worried about the batting average and the K rate. He was fine his first time up for that 1 month, Dominguez was. It's just that he's only 21 or something like that, and he's been up a couple times already, so he's got a taste of the majors. He's going to have Judge with him. He's going to have Stan with him. All these very experienced guys who could help him out along the way, and he is their prize jewel, Dominguez. He's been the Yankees top prospect for a while, so I love him. I probably should have to I think once it goes to Fab drafts, I'll probably reorder these guys. Because even though Ross Resource has Dominguez batting eighth, I'm pretty confident there's a good chance he can hit first for the Yankees. And if that comes out, his ADP is going to skyrocket. So hopefully I'll try to get him a few more times before that happens.
Yeah, I have Dominguez over Adelise as well. I've been pretty pumped on a guy that when we first did the Steamer projections, he was a 2020. He was the last one on the 2020 list. He's down to 18-18 at Steamer. The Bat X has him at 15-18. Oopsie has him at 21-26, though, if you want to go there. With Adelise, it's like I could see the power coming back to a 30 home run bat. Does he run more? I don't think he ever sees 25 steals again, but could he get to 15? Sure. Those are all great. So I think Dominguez easily beats him in steals. Maybe he comes a little lower in the power department, but I think Dominguez kind of walks all over him in batting average. It's not even because he has a great batting average. I just don't think Adelise ever gets back to being respectable in the batting average department. Now, if he does that, then he's a phenomenal pick here. I still think he's going to be very valuable where he's going to help in the other categories we mentioned. But if I'm differentiating between the two, I'll take Jason all day, especially if he does lead off, like you're saying. That's a tremendous boost in that conversation. It will be nice for Adelise if he stays in the middle of that order, because that Texas lineup is filthy. But Yankees ain't too bad either. So, yeah, give me Jason Dominguez for sure. All right, the moment that everyone has been waiting for. And the order of this has changed as well since I last talked. I'm sorry, Ben. We have Brandon Nimmo at 186. Parker Meadows at 186.5. Taylor Ward at 188. Nick Castellanos at 190. So they're all going four picks apart. Ryan and I talked about this whole group on Outfield Preview 3. And it really starts to drop off pretty soon. So how do you go with Meadows, Ward, Nimmo, Castellanos?
I actually really love this entire group of players.
Yeah, so do I.
I've had times where I've had Castellanos, Ward, and Nimmo all in my queue. But for whatever reason.
Oh, like we know who you pick, so it's okay.
Yeah. There's a reason why I left out the other guy. Well, actually, I'll say my overall rankings for them. So I have Meadows 141, Castellanos 144, Ward 145, Nimmo 159, which is well ahead of their ADPs. That's like 2 to 3 rounds above, I believe, what they're at right now. Yeah, they're in the 180s. All right, so where to begin? I'll probably save best for last. I think Castellanos is getting a little over. He's more of a 15-team play. He's kind of like the not as good Reynolds. He's probably have a little bit lower average. You know, he doesn't strike out that much. Castellanos only 21% last year. But he has some questionable skills, like not the best barrel rate. He chases a lot. But he's in a great lineup with the Phillies, and I think he's going to be a solid value. I'm kind of upset that I haven't drafted him yet because of I think he's, like I said, I think he's a value at that ADP. I just got to fix it going forward, draft him some more. And him and Ward are very similar profiles. Mid-20s homers, a handful of steals. They're going to hit the top of the lineups. Ward actually has arguably better underlying numbers than Castellanos. So like I haven't, like I said, I have them back-to-back. I love them both. And then Nimmo, I think, so we saw the average downside with him last year, and he's also had issues running or stealing in general going into last year. The 15 steals for him or whatever he had kind of came out of nowhere for me. Like I always want, we always want him to steal more because he was a leadoff hitter. He's relatively fast. And then I kind of ironically, he had the plantar fasciitis issue and he had a career high in steals. So go figure. Maybe that contributed to it. Who knows? So I have him at the end of this tier, I guess. And I'm fine with them. It's just that the average risk is a little concerning and I'm not confident the steals will return. And you're kind of, I don't think his ADP has jumped too much in Nimmo's, but definitely have him fourth on this list. And I'll wait to talk about Parker until you go first.
Well, I was going to add Parker first, but I'll hold that discussion, Pike, because I want you to have all the floor for that one. So I got Parker first. I have Nimmo second, but I'm not going to say I'm not concerned. Like I talked about him a lot on the Outfield preview show. We saw 23-15. The 224 average was a massive fall off. I agree. So was the BABIP down to 267 was a dramatic fall off. And he still had the same ground ball rate he's always had. So makes you wonder if that's like a one-year fluke situation with him, or is there more to be concerned about in that regard? He already mentioned he's still dealing with the plantar fasciitis. He's going to continue to deal with it all year. So it is what it is, I guess, at this point, unfortunately. That's the only concern. Like, if it gets worse, what happens? But he still played 151 games for the third straight season. So I'll take my chances there leading off for a very good offense. So I have Nimmo, too. And then it gets tricky because I love Taylor Ward. I love Taylor Ward. But I also really like Castellanos at this ADP. I know it's not like the best Castellanos we've seen lately. I get it, but he still put 23 homers and a 254 average, 80 runs, 86 RBIs. Like, it's not a horrific season. Projections have him in line with almost the same output as that. So we're talking outfield four, outfield five, pretty solid. Still plays pretty much every day, so you're getting plenty of at-bats. So I got Casty third and Ward fourth, but I won't argue if someone wants to move Ward up. I like Ward a lot. He's very, very good. He could get traded because he's only owed like $8 million in his walk year right now. So that could be something as well. So I got Meadows, Nimmo, Casty, Ward is how I break it down. Now, why do you have Parker Meadows number one?
Well, I'm not going to say on this show who I think he compares to going into. So people might know like Vlad Sedler has this year's Yelich article all the time. Well, I have this year's blank article, and I think Parker Meadows is that blank. So, but you come to the Patreon, Bubba and Loom Patreon, and you'll hear all about it. But with him, I think he has top 50 upside, Parker Meadows. That's why he's by far one of my favorite targets this year in drafts. And it's mainly because of what happened when he got called back up last year. So Parker kind of was one of those quote unquote darlings. I hate that word, but it kind of fits for him where everyone just kind of wants him to be a thing and his ADP skyrockets. He was going like in the 200s last year, I think, at least in main events, Parker Meadows was, but he disappointed. And then he got sent down to the minors. And then when he came back, he was a different player. So in August and September, he hit probably just below 300. It was 322 in August, 273 in September, where he couldn't hit 100. Like he was at 100 in April for his average. It was terrible. He had six combined homers in those 2 months, five steals, and he would have had more steals, but I think he got hurt running the bases or something, so he had to stop running. Someone in the Discord was saying that, I believe. He had 28 runs total, so that's like a 14 per month. That's 84 pace, which is awesome, and I don't think he was hitting leadoff the entire time. Solid RPI production, and it's backed up because you look at his rolling graphs on Fangraphs. His WOBA was kind of sitting in the mid to lower – kind of like 340 to 330 range once he returned on his rolling graphs. Meadows, he cut his carry. It peaked out his rolling 20 game average from like mid 40s earlier in the year when he was terrible. And it dropped all the way down to the 20 range. So he cut it in half essentially, or at least halved it, or took like a third off of it. So I love seeing that growth because I'm not sure what he did in the minors, Parker did, but it definitely worked in those last 2 months. And it is a small sample, but he was highly regarded going to drafts last year. His Statcast isn't going to look the best because of how bad he was to start the year. But we look at his minor league numbers. He was a 2020 guy. I do think he has excellent sprint speed. So I could see him getting more than 20 steals like he had in the minors. Wait for Baseball Savant to load. But the reduction in the K rate was huge for me. He's a leadoff hitter. I think he kind of leans fly ball heavy, so that might hurt the average a little bit. But I think he's projected for a pretty low average right now. Yeah, he has 93rd percentile sprint speed. And he's going to play every day, kind of like with the Doyle argument because of Meadows' defense. He's a very good center fielder. I think he has a tremendous upside this year. And I have him on 204 teams so far, and I look to keep that 50% share rate going.
Yeah, all I'm going to add is you mentioned those adjustments at the minor league level, and he came back and was actually showcasing those adjustments a la Lawrence Butler, who everybody loved. Just want to throw that out there. That's not the name Ben was mentioning, by the way. But that's kind of the growth I'm with you on, that I'm there. I guess the 20 to 25 home run guy that could steal 40-plus bases, I think. Like, there's – because he's running for days, and he was running for days before he got hurt again. So, yeah, like him. Not going to say so much more. You nailed it. Parker Meadows for life. All right, a couple listener questions from the Discord we will hit up real quick here, and then we will get you out of here, Ben. Let's see what the boys have for us in the old Discord here as I keep scrolling through the wrong stuff here. I can't even read what I did. Okay, there you go. Martin Sikulski says, several players with ADPs from 247 to 283, Jesus Sanchez, Nolan Jones, TJ Friedel, Garrett Mitchell, Newt Barr, JJ Bede, Carter, Willier Abreu, and Matt Wallner. Pick two guys you target most often and one fade.
I got to back up. So I had asked who Jones was, and I joked with Martin that it's probably my pick for who I don't want. But, yeah, I would probably fade either Nolan Jones or Willier Abreu.
Okay.
And then my two that I'm going to target most often are probably – I haven't drafted Jesus Sanchez, so I'm definitely going to target Evan Carter. I think he's a great bounce back candidate this year. And my other one is between Jesus and Bleday. I have drafted Bleday. I think he's pretty undervalued, at least in draft and hold in 15 teamers. I like targeting the A's this year. So out on Jones and Abreu, and definitely Carter, and then tied for Sanchez and Bleday is the other one I like.
Yeah, I'd be out on Abreu as well. I'm all in on Garrett Mitchell. Love everything about that. He could be another guy that on the rise come next year. And it's tricky. I have a handful of these guys. So I'll pick someone different than you. I'll go Matt Wallner. Big Matt Wallner fan. Steve Rushchick says, last 3 weeks in DC ADP, Lane Thomas 176, Kerry Carpenter 207. Who you got?
I believe I have – let me look.
I got Carpenter.
Carpenter. They're almost back-to-back for me, honestly. I'm going to say it even though Uncle Ted's here. It's just the platoon issue with Carpenter. Yeah. That's what I'm going to naturally be lower on the guys who are definitely in platoons. And I'm not a big fan of drafting Thomas either, but I have him two spots ahead of him in my outfield rankings.
All right. We already answered Dominguez versus Taylor Ward on Team Dominguez.
Ward too, though.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with Ward. Victor Robles versus Jung-Hoo Lee.
But I've drafted Lee so far, but I have Robles higher. I think he was one of the baits we had to cut, but I'm a little hesitant to buy into the hot streak that we saw of Robles, but I do have him higher than Lee.
Yeah, I've taken Robles as well. Lucas Beery says, who's the player in the outfield? I almost said OnlyFans. In the outfield, you are convinced completely is undervalued, and the guy you feel happy when he's drafted because he's off your board. So you're undervalued, I'm guessing, is Parker Meadows.
That's actually a pretty – yeah, let me see by – oh, the problem is that this screwed me up. Yeah, I'm going to say Meadows because of how much I love him.
Okay, and then who's a guy you're just happy to see drafted so you don't have to draft him?
That's a good one. Outfield's kind of weird because I don't really dislike anyone too much, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I can make an argument for almost any of them depending on how I'm building my team.
Oh, never mind. I found one. Spencer Steer.
Well, that's fair. For me, actually, a guy I'm glad when he's drafted is Michael Harris because I just don't know. I never know what to
do. I'll say him and Acuna, too, for the early guys.
Yeah, Michael Harris is one for me. And then a guy I think is going too low. Man, that's tricky. I kind of said it earlier. I think Jurickson Profar is going too low. I think I'm a little higher on him than you are, but I feel like he is going too low. Adam W says, how about Butler? Oh, we hit that one, Butler versus Doyle. So we got you there. And yeah, that narrows it because we already answered Parker Meadows' question for Ryan Bloomfield. So we're good. Right on the number, too. All right, Ben, any final thoughts on the outfield debates? Otherwise, we will get you on your way.
Yeah, if everyone's wondering, I have to play some pickleball tonight. So Bubba's kind of moving up. And I said 7:15, and it's 7:15 on the dot for me right now. So that's great job by Bubba.
All right, everybody. As always, this was a good one. We will be Ben will be off next week unless Ryan brings him on to do something. So I'll be busy with real work for next week. But we'll be back the following week. Maybe we'll do a little projections analysis. We've done that in the past. Now we have a handful of them. We can kind of talk about those, see where some hit, some don't, so on and so forth. But until next time, make sure you check out Ben on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. I'm at BD Entrick, and this was Bench with Bubba, episode 729. Catch you all next time.